You're listening to Dig Deep on Northern Community Radio. I'm Heidi Holton with Aaron Brown, our liberal commentator, and Chuck Barone is our conservative commentator. Today we are talking about small towns, our small towns of northern Minnesota, and how to get things done. What is there a magic bullet? We, in our prior conversation, was about would a university, a four-year university, be that silver bullet that would change everything? How do you start having these conversations?
Well, I think what we need to do is just elect more people who think like me, and then they will overwhelm the people
who
think like you.
I think people should be more like me.
And if we could just, you know, at any cost, elect more people who think like me, then we can just shout down and defeat the people who think like you, and everything will work fine.
Right. I think that's the problem we've got right now is, I've heard it called tribalism, this notion that if our side wins and wins sufficiently, in other words, not just an election here or there, but if we dominate and destroy the opposition.
A Carthaginian win, where like we pour salt in your fields, so salt so you can never reconstitute yourself.
Right. Only then will we have achieved total victory. And the reality of a democratic system and the way that Americans and human beings are impatient and easily distracted, that has never worked out for more than a couple years at most. If you can argue that in 2008 to 2010, when the Democrats had all three houses in Washington, or the executive and legislative branches in Washington, and then now when Republicans have the same dynamic, I think you'd be hard to argue that they truly have control in either of those times.
Well, it's funny because you look back historically at times where we think like one party had control. 1860, Republicans, when all the, you know, the Democrats like left the country. You look at 1932 when FDR came in and the New Deal. And we think like back then, because the changes were so huge and abrupt, that they just had clear sailing. But when you actually look at historically what it was actually like, no, like none of this was easy. Well, it was all painful. It was all
Southern
difficult.
Democrats, you know, when Democrats had Congress for all those years, Southern Democrats were their own thing and only supported the party line, so to speak, when it suited them. And then other times you had a divide in the Democratic Party, you had different factions in the Republican Party, and this was more common. I shouldn't say that. It's still common. We still have factions both on the state level and on the national level within our parties. I think one of the things that's challenging now, though, I think it's, I don't know if it's the mass media effect, the fact that everybody can believe firmly that they're a political insider with the amount of information that they have access to. So everybody therefore thinks they're smarter than everybody else. So what we see is you can't dare even think that somebody on your side might be overreaching or making just quantifiably bad decisions or conclusions about a political issue. And it gets really difficult then. You see it in the DFL here in Minnesota. We have a disagreement over mining, and it becomes very personal. Having lived through that debate for a long time, it becomes very personal. And then when you have single party rule, which is what everybody seems to want, you know, their party to be the party, you then see problems of potential corruption. You see weak or unqualified candidates not only get elected, but rise to leadership positions and things like that happen when one party has control for too long. And these are things that you normally need, like the famous Mark Twain quote, you need to change your politicians like you change diapers, and for the same reason, right? Well, that dynamic, if you really want a one party, your party to win all the time, you're inviting in the kinds of problems that come with stagnation. I know Chuck and I have commiserated. In fact, it might be the basis of our friendship is the fact that we don't quite fit in all the time with our home parties, the side of the political spectrum we're on. For me, it's been an issue where on the range, I have called out practices that I don't like in terms of how money influences politics, of how ideas become political realities. There has been insider trading that I've called out over the time that I've been involved in both in politics and as a journalist. And so even though I might agree on the ideological spectrum with a lot of the people that I'm criticizing, I had to take a chance. And I had to basically say certain things weren't going to happen in my life.
You're not being a team player.
I'm not a team player. And, and you know, I like to think, and I could be my own delusion, that I'm doing a service by doing these things. And that if I didn't, then it would be worse in the long run. But, you know, it takes somebody to say these things. And normally it would be the opposition party. And you would be afraid of getting caught up in sleazy business because it could be used against you in an election. But what if it couldn't? You know, that's what we're seeing in the country right now. Sleazy business is
status quo.
It's normal.
Yeah. If you're the Republicans in California have no say. Let me throw out something along the lines of this white knight at the local level and have you react to it. I think if we go back historically, and let's go back on the Iron Range cities of the early 1900s, I think the main force driving those communities was the company, was the industry. Essentially, there was a consolidation of power in a very few hands. And those hands were largely interested in utilizing these cities and these places and these communities for the benefit of the corporation. That was reflected in the politics and the way they were governed. We've talked about roads getting paved surreptitiously in the middle of the night and different things.
Yeah, the people had to figure out how to counter that massive corporate power.
The people had to essentially band together to overcome that. There wasn't a white knight. There was maybe a black knight. Mm-hmm. And then there was the masses of the people. Now we have in 2018, in many ways, and I think we've done this with all the best intentions, we've essentially flipped that around. And there is no corporate entity that dominates all of our cities. There's no series of bosses that sit in a back room smoking cigars deciding what's going to happen. But it really hasn't empowered, I think, people to feel like they can make decisions the way that I think the theory would have suggested. We feel beholden to bureaucracies. We feel beholden to out-of-town corporations. We feel beholden to the narrative we're given on cable news. And I feel like this white knight concept that was thrown out at us, and I've heard in other places too, is this kind of desire to have someone come in and restore order to this chaos. Like, you know, someone to walk in the door and say, I have the answers. Follow me, empower me, and I will fix this. And I feel like the problems we're having now are almost like the problems that people would have said were good problems 100 years ago. And now we're like desiring almost to go back to what they looked at as oppression, because these problems are plaguing us.
Yeah. Yeah, of course, I'm right in the midst of researching these old Iron Range towns and that corporate power dynamic. And, you know, one of the things that stands out is little things like the city council would pass resolutions forgiving the heat and light bills for widows whose husbands had died in the mines.
Imagine that.
Because there was no social network or social safety net for those people. And it was just considered part of business of being a city is, you know, Widow Jenkins has got nothing, so let's help her out. She's got three kids and they've got no money. And a little like, I don't want to go back to that. You know, I'm glad we have developed a social contract of sorts, not as strong as in other industrialized countries.
Although today we would wait till winter's over and then shut off their power.
Right. Like, yeah. Well, there's things like that.
What we have done is we have changed the system for where you have the benevolent one that you can go kneel down in front of and kiss the ring and essentially like pressure something good to happen within a despotic system. Or you can have a less despotic system where bureaucratically we kind of decide that despotic things are going to happen now and then.
In a certain way. And it's okay for them to happen in a certain way.
Exactly.
So yeah, that gets really complicated. So you don't want to deal with an entity like the Oliver Mining Company in its prime. They were spying on people. They ran things. They used all kinds of means that we wouldn't want our corporations using today. And then we also, the way that the political power was wrested from those massive, powerful hands, probably not things that, like, I research Victor Power. You know, he's a fascinating figure. One of the things I come away with is, you know, he was a fascinating figure. He did a lot of good. But if someone today did what he did, we would call them viciously corrupt.
Right,
you know,
right.
Like, it wasn't by the standards of the time.
Yeah.
I mean, I shouldn't even say that because some people did think that at the time. But he got away with it because people wanted what he did.
I think this is crazy, but like I just read a poll this week. The most revered person in Russia today. You would think, you know, Vladimir Putin would be, Vladimir Putin was down on the list, the most revered historical figure in Russia today, Joseph Stalin.
Yeah.
And you're like, this is a guy who killed tens of millions of Russians.
We were on top of the world, baby,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
And that's the thing behind this notion is when we deal with these tough partisan environments where it's hard to even talk to your neighbor or your uncle or whoever because of these political disagreements, we want someone to just fix it, make the pain go away. And the reality is, and I teach conflict resolution, not that I can fix this, but conflict, I can say, comes from this notion that we both care about something, the country, the world, our town, and we disagree because we have different visions for it, we have different ideas for it, but we both want it to do well, and so we have conflict. And I think people, you know, either they want to be left alone or they want to live a good life or they want everything to be the way they want it to be. But we disagree because we all care about it in our own way. And so, yeah, I'm not surprised. In fact, in Russia, for example, having come out of an authoritarian system, they never really shook that. Not really. Not for long. The democratic notion, democracy as we would understand it, has always been a minority in the 20th and 21st century in Russia. And so it blows me away in the United States of America, which allegedly won the Cold War, that we, as we deal with the pluralism of many different people with many different opinions and different points of view, that we are now drifting toward a much more authoritarian way of thinking about our problems, whereas we would like somebody to ride in.
That's Aaron Brown. He's our liberal commentator for Dig Deep. Chuck Marone is our conservative commentator. They're talking about this notion that a white knight could come in and solve our problems in society. Aaron continues.
It happens on the left, too, because when Bernie Sanders was running, a lot of my friends aren't going to like me saying this, but when Bernie Sanders was running for president against Hillary Clinton, and even Hillary Clinton supporters could be accused of this, too, but there were memes shared online, like Bernie Sanders literally garbed as a knight, you know,
right,
to slay the dragons.
I saw them with Donald Trump, too.
Right, and Trump, I think
drain the swamp.
Appeal,
like, let's
drain
go
the swamp.
In.
If you want to beat the scoundrels, elect the scoundrel in chief to come in and,
right,
and just do what he does.
But he's beholden to no one.
Yeah,
go
right.
in and slay
right.
every beast.
And,
right.
and I think the appeal of Sanders was the same. He's never fit in with the Democratic Party. He's this outside guy. And I don't want to despair. I mean, people have their own opinions about
in elections.
These
we all get a little starry eyed.
Yeah, yeah, right. And then you had the cold pragmatism of Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush, who both met their end in their own way. So this idea, we would like it to just have a president, for instance, to fix us.
Right.
And the reality is, as we see, is a president can't. Obama couldn't. I think Obama achieved whatever Obama achieved. He achieved through some kind of agreement with his grassroots support and got enough votes, enough things to do a little bit. Whereas the top-down notion that we get with Trump and probably with whoever comes after Trump and probably whoever comes after that person is this notion that we're electing a person to make us feel good and they'll impose something that makes us all feel good. But the reality is we don't all feel good about policy. We want very different things in a lot of cases.
Looking back at history again, we can see a time when someone did do this and was successful, and his name was Augustus. He came in and basically killed off all of his opponents and said, now we will have peace. And it worked, you know, in a sense that they had yeah. generations then of dictators, some who were good, some who were not. When we think of the Roman Empire or the Roman period of Pax Romana, the great, that was after they got rid of their democracy. That was mm-hmm. after they got rid of their republic and basically said, this is too big and complicated. We're going to have one person run it. I think if we switch back to the local level just for a second, I do think that the interesting dynamic that we have at the local level is that as we have gone through this transition through the Depression and World War II, and then on through where we really had a national consensus amongst people who had lived through the Depression together and gone to war together and faced a mortal enemy together, people who got along better than we do today because they had that experience of getting along. They also lived very differently. They lived in cities that had conservatives and liberals. They hadn't kind of self-sorted the way we have today. So it was a different society. We went through this period of basically centralizing our decision making. Your little city can no longer have its own set of weird taxes and rules and regulations. We're going to do that at the state level because it'll be more efficient, it'll be better, and we can handle things better. What this leaves us here at the local level is with like a very limited kind of dummy set of tools. We have all these issues that we're facing here, all these problems we have to solve, and we have like three tools to do it with. It's like we have to build this house, and I will give you like a tiny hacksaw, a rusty old hammer, and a screwdriver, and it's a flathead screwdriver, and you've got all these Phillips screws, and you know, like you're never going to get it done, and you wind up fighting with each other and getting mad at each other and going to the state and asking for help with this and that. And I think that what we have done is we've actually, in the guise of trying to help, limited our own ability to solve our own problems.
Yeah,
that is like a liberal conservative kind of, I think that Aaron and I can agree on what the problems are and the need to actually take them seriously. I feel like what has happened is as we've centralized things, we have one party that really focuses on identifying the problems and then coming up with more centralized solutions to them, while the other party says, that's not a problem at all, just ignore it, like, you know, not a big deal, and then actually tries to devolve some of the power occasionally, unless they're in power, and then they run huge deficits and don't do that. For me, the frustration is that at the local level, I would love to be able to roll up our sleeves, work together, and actually try to figure this out. But we wind up fighting over abstract concepts because we don't actually have the tools to do anything.
Yeah, you know, the biggest controversy of the year in the city of Hibbing is the Ten Commandments plaque that was up in this courthouse.
Why?
It got more attention than anything else. And
right.
Everyone can have your own opinion about whether it should or shouldn't have been there. The point is, that is not the most important problem in the city of Hibbing right now.
Right.
One of the things I find in looking back at the old council minutes was the audaciousness of their ability to think, hey, we can try to solve this. There's a lot of things they didn't do that they considered that were just audacious, but they thought that way. And I think the bigger thing, after many generations of on the range, just for instance, of having so many other streets and roads and sewers paid for through mining money, is over time, you lose the ability to think of the ideas.
Yeah.
It's not that they're against it. It's that the people who get elected are elected, you know, kind of on personality and their social circles and things, but they don't have the ideas. And then they say, well, I'm sure the community will have ideas, but if nobody's thinking of ideas, there are no ideas.
I cannot applaud Aaron more. We have a dearth of imagination at the local level, and we do because we have beaten it out of local.
Right.
Local
and if a mayor comes along who does have an idea, or a city council member,
you can't do that. There's liability. You got this issue. Right. You got that issue. You got to get to the state to approve that. We can't, you know, tweak that. It's insane. And what we have done is we have created a system where creative people, the people that you want being creative in your community, coming up with ideas and trying things, that is not allowed, not acceptable. And we get frustrated with the way our local governments run. I'm going to say something. I was going to say, you don't have the best and brightest there, like running for mayor, running for council. I don't mean that in like a pejorative way. I don't mean the people there are not smart and don't care. But what you don't have is you don't have a system open to creativity and actually problem solving. You have a bunch of people who are asked to be technocrats and run a system that's been given to them, a dysfunctional system. And you can't do it. It won't work.
Chuck Marone is our conservative commentator. Aaron Brown is our liberal commentator. In our next segment, we take a look at the ramifications of thinking differently on a local level. This is Dig Deep. I'm Heidi Holton. Thanks for tuning in. Sign up for the podcast through iTunes. There's a link at kaxe.org.
It's so easy to say, I'm sorry. When the harm has already been done. But what about my night spent crying? I still remember everyone. It's so easy to say, I love you. Just trips.